Hey guys, this is Derek, and you're listening to the Working Triathlete Podcast. Today, I have two of our other coaches on with me, and we're going to discuss some interesting topics. So we have Derek Owens, who's out in Boulder, and we have Becca, who's here with me in Cleveland. A couple weeks ago, we attended the Endurance Exchange that was put on by USA Triathlon. For those that don't know, the Endurance Exchange is a conference that I would say is probably meant for like race directors and coaches, but there's also vendors there promoting their products. But it's a good conference to network with other individuals in the industry and just really brainstorm about how to enhance the sport and like best practices for the coaches and race directors to build business, but also just the, you know, what's advancing as far as science with training and things like that. But first I'll have Derek introduce himself and then Becca, and then we'll discuss, you know, some of the hot topics from the Endurance Exchange. So Derek, why don't you kick it off first?
Hi, everyone. Yeah, Derek Owens here. I am now living in Boulder, Colorado. I've been here for the past year. I think the last time I was on the podcast, I may have still been living in California. I was in Oakland, California for a few years before that. But yeah, been coaching with Working Triathlete for the last 2 years. I had a really great time just networking and learning as much as I could at Endurance Exchange, hanging out with Derek and Becca since we spent a lot of time in person together. But yeah, excited to be here.
Awesome. And Becca, you haven't been on yet, so talk a little bit more, just give you a brief background about yourself, and then we can get rolling about the Endurance Exchange.
Hey everyone, Coach Becca here. And as Derek said before, I'm based in Cleveland, but I grew up and most recently moved from Colorado, where, as we all know, multi-sport is king out there. So that's kind of how I got into it. My background was in middle distance track. I ran at Vanderbilt University. And then in my graduate program, I joined the club triathlon team at Colorado State and just fell in love with the sport of triathlon. So decided to take it one step further and started coaching because I really wanted to share my passion for triathlon with others and be able to enjoy and help others experience the same thing I did. So I've been with Working Triathlete for about a year now, and it's been a great experience and still working to increase my athlete load. So if anyone out there listening is interested, let me know. But yeah, and this past at Endurance Exchange was my first time there, but I thought it was a really valuable experience, especially as a newer coach, just to meet new people, connect with different people, and get in some new training philosophies and just good reminders about things to think about as I develop my own personal coaching philosophy.
Awesome. I want to put you on the spot real quick, just because I love this fact. What is your 400 meter personal record?
So my 400 meter record is from my junior year in high school, and I ran a 53.6. It's still in the top 10 of Colorado high school prep records. So yeah, that's my claim to fame. Don't think I can do that anymore, but helps with those that sprint finish. You never know when that might come in handy. 70.3.
Exactly. So I know you got there a couple of days early because you were finishing up your focus for your coaching. Was there anything during that time period that you thought was interesting, or did they cover any topics that you that may have been different that you're aware of?
Yeah, so that was a great clinic that I had. I really appreciated the group of people that were there. We're all very interested in the clinic and asking questions. We had a huge range of how long people have been coaching in the sport. We beginners all the way up to people who have been doing this for 30 years. So a lot of different perspectives. So it was nice to bounce ideas off of different people, whether it was like fueling ideas of different products people have tried or different types of training plan development, having different ideas in the room to bounce each other off. One thing that I really took away from it is how getting more subjective feedback from your athletes. You know, the Training Peaks data is great, but it can only tell so much of the story. So something I'm kind of bringing into my practice this year is trying to get a little bit more feedback from my athletes about, in general, how they're feeling, what's going well, what's not going well, more so than just what the numbers say. Because a lot of times, while they are great insight, it's not the whole picture. And I think that is something that we kind of touched on across the course of the whole endurance exchange and how coaching is evolving.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, we work with a lot of working adults, and generally speaking, you know, we can have a program built out that makes sense from a physical stress standpoint. But as we all know, work stress, life stress all play a factor in how we're going to perform. So it's always good to get a temperature on how they feel overall. I guess moving in, yeah, overall in the endurance exchange, you know, we had a lot of different sessions that were pretty interesting, from just coaching. You know, I know some of the coaches that are with Project Podium talked about how they use Inside, and, you know, from that to even just the state of the sport and some, you know, surveys that were pushed out to coaches and race directors. But, you know, what was your favorite sessions that you guys attended?
I'll start. So one of the first sessions, I think that there was an earlier morning session on the first day of the larger conference on Saturday, but the first big session was a keynote with Dr. Inigo San Millan, who has been featured, like talking a lot about zone two training and just, like training zones in general. He's a researcher who works at Colorado University here in Boulder. And I just found his session to be incredibly fascinating. And actually, the session was about like the multidisciplinary approach to endurance sports and training. And so one of the like really main things that he was talking about was that while things like physiology and training and monitoring and nutrition all play a role in the success of an endurance athlete, one of the other big things that sometimes isn't necessarily focused on as much is lifestyle, which is related to what you were talking about just now, Becca, where as coaches, we can be looking at this objective data that's being synced through sensors and people's watches and uploaded to Training Peaks. But a lot of times, if we're not talking with our athletes consistently, we're not necessarily sure the impacts that their lifestyle, be that sleep, like stress at work, stress with family life at home, illness, all of those things are how they're playing a role in what that training data really looks like. And so, yeah, just emphasizing the importance of like lifestyle when it comes to that multidisciplinary approach. He one thing that he said that I thought was really funny that I wrote down was that you can't go to the store and just buy a pound of mitochondria. And so a lot of times people are thinking about all these like marginal gains, that 1%, but in reality, it's all of these bigger factors that are playing into the actual physiological changes that are happening in your body. And you have to be doing the work, and you have to be like doing the best with your lifestyle changes and adapting your training to your lifestyle in order to get that significant benefit.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I know, you know, we use Slack for our team-based communication. And so we have athletes that we give them the opportunity to ask questions for coaches and things like that. And it's really funny to look at some of the questions people ask that might be a really, really trivial amount of gains, where, you know, most people need to be focusing their attention on actually putting in the work and then the recovery side of things too. Like, a lot of people just underestimate how much sleep they need and how it impacts performance. And, you know, if you're focusing on putting in the work and getting quality sleep and consistent sleep, that's going to help quite a bit. And, you know, that's where a lot of people need to start, you know, rather than going to the store and buying the latest and greatest sports drink or whatever it may be.
Though it is fun to like nerd out and buy new things if you've got access to them, and it's just fun to try new toys, but definitely like the bigger gains are coming from those like overarching lifestyle and just training that you're doing. Another just like through line over the course of the entire weekend, I heard multiple presenters, maybe some of whom were in each other's sessions, but I also think that it might have just been a coincidence that they quoted Peter Drucker, the business management guru, that said, he said, only what gets measured gets managed. And so, yeah, just like I felt like that was coming back pretty consistently, talking a lot about physiological testing and consistent testing and how testing can support athletes and ensuring that they're targeting the correct zones, but can also be an accountability measure for coaches to ensure that the training prescription that we're putting together for athletes is in fact affecting the change that we're interested in affecting. And yeah, so just that consistent testing piece, and doing as much measuring of training and setting benchmarks as we possibly can to ensure that we're really moving in the direction that we want to.
Yeah, and I remember you talked about the time frame too of like when tests should be completed, because there has to be a reasonable amount of time to see the stimulus change as well. So it's not like we can test like once a week. While we might see gains for like a new athlete, but when an athlete's well developed, we want to test a little bit less frequently than that.
But yeah, like kind of following up on that, Project Podium and Insight also honed in on that idea as well, talking about their measure of testing, which, you know, everyone has their different philosophy. But I thought it was pretty cool how they talked about how, you know, different athletes are going to have a different metabolic profile. And so their training needs to be specified towards them, and it really needs to be individualized, because I think they gave some examples of these are some of their up and coming short course athletes where they weren't really making any progress, and then they realized that they were targeting the wrong training stimulus, and once they changed that, they made huge gains. So I think that can be important to realize that, you know, the same training is not going to work for everyone. And, you know, some more targeted specific testing can help you really figure out what the best way is to train specific athletes.
Yeah, that was a really good seminar that we went to. And for those that don't know, we actually offer these tests as well through Inside. And I know they tried to not promote it, but we knew as coaches with the Working Triathlete that we offer that service. And it provides some really valuable data. And, you know, for athletes racing short course, like draft legal racing, the demands are a little bit different than long course. So you got to train appropriately. And what I thought was really interesting, they talked about how the 5-minute power on the bike is going to be the highest, the first part of the bike when they get out of the water, because they have to get that chase pack. And so obviously their demands of the sport's different than what most of us do with long course. And what we're measuring is VLA max. And for long course athletes, we want that lower for both running and cycling to provide the best gains possible. But another thing that was really interesting with Project Podium, and I learned a little bit more about this after the fact, and because I was curious, but a lot of these athletes are, you know, handpicked through our governing body that have phenomenal run and swim backgrounds. And like Becca mentioned, like these are athletes that are Olympic hopefuls for the 2028 games. And so they live in a lifestyle that's conducive to providing the best outcome. They train together. I assume they live together, but they go from Arizona to Utah during different times of the year to get the best training in. And from what I understand is they do attend college, online college, at Arizona State, and which allows them to travel during the different times of year to get the best training in possible.
It's a cool system they've got set up and figured out. So it'll be interesting to see how those athletes turn out in a few years.
Yeah.
They seem to be on the right track.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I actually, there was another session with Tommy Zafiris, ex-pro triathlete, husband of Katie Zafiris, And he's the one that's in charge of talent identification for like Team USA for like the Olympic hopefuls. And the way that he was describing who he looks for and how they're identifying these athletes, it's he was essentially saying that he wants to find really good runners, you know, like the absolute top of the field for high school and collegiate runners that have ever swam before, that have a record of swimming at a swim meet. And he wants them to be people who have never heard of triathlon. And that over the course of the last, like, what, 15 years or so, that's the data that has come back to demonstrate who the people that are performing the best for the United States in the Olympics are people who are runners that have some bit of swim background that learn how to bike. And yeah, just how important the run really is at that short course draft legal racing in order to be really competitive.
Yeah, certainly. Like the swim and the run combo are so important. And like you mentioned, the bike you can teach to anyone. You know, once you have the engine and the other two, it's going to transfer to the bike, and it just requires time and developing the skill set of drafting and things like that.
Like talking about testing, physiological testing, we've like Derek mentioned, we got the power performance decoder PPD test that we are doing with a lot of our athletes through Inside that provides people access to like essentially laboratory testing in their own home, which I think is awesome. Just really opens things up. Another thing that Dr. Inigo Simelan said that I think was underlying as well is the future is biosensors, and just how maybe in the next just couple to 5 years or so, we'll see more and more biosensors that are being just more consistently adopted. I know that somebody was recently talking about on Slack the consistent lactate monitor that looks like it's going to be introduced in the coming future. And just like how much more access people are going to have to their own physiological data at home. And yeah, I think that that's going to be a fascinating next step for endurance sports and how we as coaches adapt to these changes is what's going to keep us ahead of the curve.
Yeah. One interesting thing, so I mentioned at the Endurance Exchange, there's coaches, race directors, but there's also vendors. And some of these vendors at the Endurance Exchange are, you know, showcasing their technology. I know there's a couple biosensor companies that were there, but Training Peaks was also there. And I know Derek, you know, is familiar with a lot of the guys at Training Peaks, but, you know, we touched a lot about AI and how we're going to gather data and put it into Training Peaks as well. And this is the next step, because the more data we can compile and plug into Training Peaks, the more we're going to know about the athletes and things like that. But I think it is worth talking about AI a little bit and where we stand, where I think where Training Peaks is leaning into. I think when we look at the context of what has evolved in the last like few weeks, especially with Ironman, you know, I know they partnered with TriDot, but and that is an interesting and a totally different topic altogether. But when we look at these platforms and how we can capture data and help us use it as a better tool as coaches, it's going to be pretty valuable. And I think it's a matter of time before we start seeing sprint finishes and 70.3s at the top end of the level, because coaches are going to be able to develop athletes to their peak potential. And I think we're going to see more people at that level, and it's going to be super, super exciting.
Yeah, I think some people are a little scared of AI maybe taking over coaches' jobs or anything, something like that, or how it might change the sport. But I think the perspective is that really it is going to become a tool to make us all better athletes, better coaches. You know, of course, I think it's this kind of goes back to the objective data and the subjective data. And I think the coach's responsibility will be taking all this information that AI can help create and interpret. And how do we, utilize that and really make the best of our athletes and get them up to their peak potential. But I think it does have the potential to really elevate athletes of all levels.
Yeah, definitely. Artificial intelligence was another through line that everyone was kind of talking about and that was covered in a lot of different sessions over the course of the weekend. And I think something that that a few folks came back to was just that we're at this point in coaching and just in society in general, where we're unsure of exactly what the next thing that's going to happen is. But if we think back 15, 20 years to the introduction of programs like Training Peaks and how many people were just still delivering training plans via Microsoft Excel files. And maybe would have never imagined that we'd have programs like Training Peaks to help us interpret the data that's coming back from athletes' workouts and training and racing. And so that was a huge step that was taken. And I think that we're at a similar place now where it's just a matter of time before more and more of what we're interpreting and what we're utilizing as coaches and athletes is data that's being processed and that like trends that have been highlighted because of artificial intelligence. And so, yeah, I'm unsure of what the next year or 5 years looks like, but I'm really excited about it and excited to lean into everything that we're going to be able to utilize and leverage. Have either of you guys played around at all with AI tools, OpenAI, like in some of the ways that folks were talking about at the conference?
Well, I would say not in a traditional sense of coaching, but to help with just certain tasks of like getting my thoughts organized and things like that, which I think does relate to my job, because if I'm writing an email or something that I need to convey something, I'm definitely help using that. And I think it's a great, great tool. I don't know if it's going to be able to, this weekend I tried to write a swim program and it couldn't add up the math correctly for the swim sets. And I was trying to like, coach
I mean,
it.
I have trouble adding like yards together when I'm putting together swim sets sometimes.
So do too. I, but it was interesting, cause I was like, man, like what is it missing here? And I couldn't figure out like why it wasn't capturing the right yardage. Cause I'd ask for the total. But either way, like we know that's going to evolve as well. And the more data that it's consuming, the more it's going to know. And I mean, I use it. I think it's a valuable tool. I probably don't use it. I use it as a very surface level. I'm sure people are using it on a much higher level than I am right now.
Yeah. And I mean, if we, I went into some of these AI sessions thinking that what they were going to be talking about was the ways in which, like, I don't know, that all of this data is going to, the decisions are going to be made for us as coaches for what the prescription should be coming up next. And while I do think that that's already happening in programs like TriDot and there's another one that I can't remember right now. But I think that some of the stuff that I wasn't realizing is artificial intelligence that coaches are using and that athletes are using sometimes behind our backs is with regards to like recovery metrics and like how recovered you are based on your resting heart rate and HRV. We're talking about wearables, biosensors like Whoop and Oura Ring, anything that's measuring your HRV and resting heart rate, and then telling you how ready you are to train or how not ready you are to train. Like those recovery scores and recovery metrics are algorithms that have been developed and designed based on trends in HRV and resting heart rate data. I know that was another session that was on Sunday. Becca, I think that you had already left at that point, but Paul Larson talked about optimizing coaching with HRV just the importance of metrics like HRV. Derek, did you have any like takeaways from that session or just conversations that you had around heart rate variability and resting heart rate over the course of the weekend?
Yeah, so no, I've had conversations with athletes that use Whoop, and I need to see, I want to see if I can correlate like how an athlete feels subjectively with HRV and see if we can see that trend already. Because I know when Whoop first came out, people were using it and it was already telling them a lot of things they already knew. Like if they had alcohol the evening before, they probably didn't feel as good the next day. And that's pretty easy to measure. And I'm talking with a couple athletes that use Whoop now, and I want to see if I can correlate the trend of how they feel on a subjective level with where their HRV is, and try to determine if we can read it beforehand, like if we see the HRV numbers, or if it's like kind of spot on with how they feel when they wake up in the morning. But yeah, other than that, no other conversations I really had. For the fact.
I mean, yeah. Oh, go ahead, Becca.
I was just gonna say, I get a little hesitant about, you know, becoming like harnessed to what your watch or your Oura Ring, whatever it says. You know, you also just have to be in tune with your body and know, like, I need an extra recovery day. I, for whatever reason, I'm fighting off a cold. I didn't get enough sleep. My kid woke up in the middle of the night, whatever it is. So I think it's important as athletes and coaches to not like use all these biosensors and metrics as a crutch of like not being in tune with your body. So I think they can be a, you know, really good tool. And kind of as Derek alluded to, is like, you need to see how well it actually like aligns with it. But, and for some people it might work very well, and it might be worth like, hey, even though I think I feel okay, like numbers say I'm not ready, maybe we should take an extra day off, especially in terms of like overtraining and things like that. But I think other people might almost like use it as an excuse of like, oh, I can't do my workout today, or go into something with a bad headspace. Like, oh, this workout's going to suck because I got a poor sleep score last night. Well, yeah, because you're thinking it's going to suck. It is. So I think there's like a fine balance of using that data to like make sure you're not overdoing it, but also, you know, just relying on your own body cues and leaning into that and not like trapping yourself based on what a number says.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things that is, that all of this is making me think, is that we have so much data that's coming in, and sometimes the subjective is one of the more important things, right? Like what you were talking about earlier, Becca. And I've had experiences with athletes where I ask them how they felt on a run, and they say, I was running 8:15 pace. And it's like, yeah, but how did you feel? And they're like, oh, well, 8:15, that's how I felt. And like, that's not a feeling. And yeah, so if all of this data and all of these numbers and metrics that are coming in make it harder for you to tune in with your rating of perceived exertion and how you feel when you wake up in the morning, all of that, then I think it's making things way cloudier than it should be. And so, yeah, utilizing it, but not leaning on it and using it like a crutch, I think is really important, Becca. And I know that from my personal experience, but also hearing from other athletes, when your Whoop score isn't looking very good during race week, that can feel a type of way, as hard as you try to ignore it. If you're in the red 2 days before a race, or in the red on race morning, you're like, uh-oh, what does that mean? And actually one coach that I was talking to said that he had talked with Whoop about hiding a Whoop score during certain calendar blocks, and had done that with athletes. I don't know if that's something that Whoop is still doing, and I don't know how much my athletes would love me if I had their Whoop score hidden the entire week of race week. But yeah, just like trends for those scores are way more important than that like individual day's capture. And so yeah, making decisions based on what a score is on a given day isn't necessarily the most valuable thing to do. But like you said, Becca, maybe waking up and saying, oh, okay, I'll give this workout a try, but if I'm not feeling really great after that second 1K at the track, then maybe this like lack of recovery is really impacting me.
Yep. Yeah. And on the flip side, I always tell athletes, like, this is kind of going a different direction, but I'll keep it brief. If you wake up and you feel a little crummy, always start the workout, always start the warm up, and always start the first interval. And I know from my personal experience, I've had some of the best workouts ever when I have never, like when I initially started the workout, I did not feel great. I just needed a little extra time to warm up. And once I hit that lab button on the first interval, everything kind of clicks. But on the flip side, there's been a couple of times too where I start the interval, you know, I'm 30 seconds in and I know I'm way off mark, and that's when I shut it down. And again, this is all subjective data that I'm collecting in my mind, but the Whoop, I'm curious to see how we can align that with Whoop and as that kind of continues to evolve as well.
Yeah, so Derek, I know that you got to talk about some stuff at Endurance Exchange too. You were featured in the Tri Tank, like Shark Tank thing.
Yeah,
you want to talk to us a little bit about what that was and how it went?
Yeah, absolutely. So, a little background: Joe Fleenor, who is a race director in Tennessee, he and another race director, Faye Yates, they run Magic Sports, you know, a lot of great events in Tennessee, Kentucky, and Alabama. He gave me a call one day and was like, "Hey, do you have any ideas, you know, for this Tri-Tank challenge? We've gotten submissions and they're not very great." And so I thought about it for a half a day and it's like, I have a really good idea. I think this would be pretty awesome. And so what it is the Tri-Tank challenge was for race directors to come up with ideas to, you know, enhance, you know, participation in business and things like that. And the concept I came up with was a true team national championship. So it would look like a traditional cross country championship where you have teams of seven people, five people score, the lowest score wins. So for example, the person that crosses the line first, they get 1 point. The second person gets 2 points, so on and so forth. But this is where it gets interesting, and this is where it adds value to the sport and race directors, especially local race directors, is the qualifying process. So I created this criteria for the qualifying process that would ideally create a unique experience and hopefully drive engagement with athletes and retention as well. And that was the whole concept. Like, it's like, I was thinking in the lens of like, how do we drive retention with short course athletes and really create an event that's challenging to get to that inspires athletes. So there's nine regions within USA Triathlon across the country. And the proposal I said was five teams per region can qualify. And the qualifying process would be you'd have to get five athletes on your team to go to a race. And then whatever your average USAT score is, that's your score for the region. And so you basically want to get on the leaderboard of the top five teams to qualify for regionals. And so if a team gets bumped out, they can always go to another race and compete again. So it kind of creates some strategy for teams that really want to go. And ideally, the evolution would be we want teams to really want to go to create a highly competitive event and just create the engagement piece after the fact. I also propose that there would be no age groups. So teams could be made up with athletes that are 18 to 40, you know, because that, you know, there's, we all know athletes between those ages that are highly competitive. And I think it'd be unique to have basically these teams organize the best team they can. So I presented the idea. There's a couple other presenters. I think I was one of four presenters, right? And ended up getting second, which I was completely fine with. The person that won, they have an organization called I Try that helps youth girls get into the sport of triathlon and helps build life skills and everything, which is pretty cool. So, but I'll talk a little bit more about, you know, my concept. And an interesting thing that happened, I was at an after hours event hosted by, you know, one of the executives from Ticket Socket that hosted the Tri-Tank Challenge. And someone from Super League was like, we need to run with this idea. And so I don't know if USAT is interested or not, but I know there's other organizations that think it's a really good idea. And I think race directors also like the idea too, because they see an opportunity for enhancing their races and getting participation with more teams. Because at the end of the day, like I know Working Triathlete, we are a team and we have awesome events and awesome team events, but the sport is pretty secluded at times. And if we can get other clubs involved to create that dynamic team experience, I think it'll be really, really healthy for the growth of the sport.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And I will say, when the judges were deliberating, when you guys were outweighing those who presented, everyone seemed like in favor. It was more of like, you aren't going to put this on yourself, but
exactly.
They liked the general idea. And the race director on it was like, I think that'd be, you know, great to promote some more local events. Yeah, I think, of course, like logistically we'd all have to like figure things out, but I think the interest is definitely there. And I think it would create like a new dynamic environment and another thing for teams and clubs to shoot for. That would really, you know, elevate more of the short course experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be the like national champions of teams, right? Like
100%. We captured the club title last year at Multisport Nationals. I think we had what, 4 or 5 individual national champions and then 2 relay champions. We just got to add more.
Yeah, USAT needs more pictures of working triathletes holding banners.
I agree.
Never enough.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a really cool opportunity to get in front of some of the leadership at USA Triathlon and, you know, also in front of race directors. But yeah, so like I alluded to, like, this is not something that I can execute. I mean, I suppose I could in a way, but it's really for USAT to kind of take it and run with, or another organization if they want to. So we did receive a cash prize, and I just donated it to iTry because they're doing really good thing for the sport with, you know, youth development and things like that. And it was kind of cool to see everyone else follow suit. And then I believe TicketSocket also doubled the amount that they got as well. So a good way to give funds to an organization that's helping the sport grow from the youth perspective. So yeah, I guess what would be interesting to talk about, you know, I'm a coach. I coach full time, obviously, and I know you guys coach, and I think a lot about how do we grow the sport. And I know USAT has had some difficulties, you know, and we know this past week they talked about their new tiered membership, which was not well received. And I think a lot more was uncovered. You know, I know in 2022 they talked about how, or the financial statement, I think they lost almost $3 million. And I'm pretty sure it's the same direction for 2023. And I think it's important as people that are in the industry, it's like, how do they think about growing the sport as a whole? Like, we have race directors that obviously want to grow their own events, but that's kind of the lens I thought of, you know, and because it's my livelihood and we need the sport to grow to sustain my livelihood. And there's always going to be evolutions with triathlon and sport. And we've seen it now, like, you know, even since I've started racing in 2017, again, there's very, very, very few short course races that are highly competitive. And when people start moving up in distance, it gets more competitive. Obviously Ironman, you know, 70.3 events are pretty competitive. Getting to Kona is really, really challenging to get to. And, you know, that's the lens I thought of. And I just think it's important to always kind of think like that, even if the governing body is struggling to, you know, retain athletes and things like that. It's like, what can individuals do to help promote the sport and grow it as well?
Yeah, definitely. Anything we can do to encourage more people, not only to do their first one and cross it off the bucket list, but to stay engaged and continue in it and, you know, bring a friend into it and things of that nature. Yeah. And can continue to grow it as a competitive sport too. You know, running races, there's so many opportunities to get into a really competitive race, but that's not always the case in triathlon, especially not in short course triathlon. So I think anything to kind of heighten that would be great.
Yeah, and this kind of comes back to your idea, Derek, for the Tri-Tank Challenge. But I mean, building like fun race environments for sure, and like having race directors that are putting on awesome events like magic events, and but then also the team aspect and being a part of a community is really what I've seen contributes to people being excited about sticking around and staying in the sport, is having other people around them that push them to be the most competitive athlete that they can be. And yeah, that people get to train and race alongside their friends and get to wear the same kit. So yeah, that community piece is huge as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Community is what brings everyone together. And like I kind of said before, like we know as working adults, like many of us train solo together, you know, just because of job duties or whatever the time limits we have with our lifestyles. But it's exciting when we can train together. And then obviously taking a step further, when you can race together or go to team events, it just enhances the community and culture aspect quite a bit. But I do want to jump back real quick and talk a little bit more about the whole membership tiered program, just because there was a lot of backlash and USAT ended up going back on it. But essentially, they announced like a multiple, I guess. So in the past, USAT membership was $50 a year. And I couldn't really tell you. So basically, when you pay for your membership, you get ranked, and I don't really know the other benefits beyond that, but
you get your insurance.
Yeah.
And race insurance, that's about it.
And now they have like bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. And from what I understand is they said like, if you want to qualify for Team USA, you have to be a platinum member, which is $400 a year. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot, you know, for like a membership. And I remember seeing someone comment like, that's more than my bar dues every year. And I thought that was interesting, because if someone's a professional, if they're a lawyer and they're paying less than $400 a year for their bar review, that was interesting. But yeah, like the forums like Slow Twitch, even at social media, people commented immediately with their distaste and how they rolled it out, because no one really knew about it either. And it kind of came out of thin air, and I think they thought it'd be good to roll it out the way they did. But I would argue, yeah, it's probably important to raise the membership fees, but to raise the rate of athletes and compete at Worlds to $400 a year, that seemed a little interesting. But go ahead.
I was just gonna say that didn't cover like the price to get the Team USA kit or anything like that. It was $400 to reserve your spot. There might've been a few other perks, of course, but you'd still have to, you know, pay to do the race and pay to get the like required Team USA gear.
Yeah. Which I that concept of the required gear is interesting. I guess when you register, you probably just have to buy it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not when I'm you not register, sure. But it's, you know, a few months later. My mom and brother did it way back when for World Duathlon Championships, but I remember they had to like go through the process and whatnot.
Yeah. And for those that are listening, this is for like World Triathlon World Championships, not like the Ironman brand 70.3 or Ironman World Championship. But either way, like, so USAT did backtrack and they said, okay, you no longer need the $400 membership to go to Worlds. Which I don't think those athletes would even care about pain. It's just, I think the way it was rolled out was not the best way to do it.
Yeah, I think it was effective this year, essentially. So it's like people who are already planning on going to a world championship this year would have had to upgrade their membership.
Yeah,
I'm sure that there were folks around Endurance Exchange that weekend that knew about this change that was happening. And I find it interesting that as some of the like biggest and most present stakeholders, like coaches and race directors, all gathering in one place, that there wasn't some kind of just open forum or opportunity for USA Triathlon to kind of talk about this idea before rolling it out and then having to immediately like pull back on what they announced. But yeah, I'm looking at the USAT website now, and it seems like the perks that come with the gold and platinum statuses now are like getting your printed subscription to USA Triathlon magazine and VIP packet pickups and exclusive VIP experiences and opportunities, all that kind of stuff, which I'm sure are great. But I can't say that I've ever experienced any of those like VIP packet pickup or anything at USAT events just yet.
Yeah.
But I do applaud USAT for, you know, changing it, you know, like listening to people's, you know, opinions and feedback on it.
100%.
Not being like, no, this is the way it is. Like, we don't care. We need to make money. So this is how we're going to do it. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Good for them.
Yeah. So I don't know how much, if you guys looked at the financial statements, but their biggest revenue generator is the annual memberships. And so I think they're looking at ways to increase that, which is smart. Like, if you're a business, like, you have to be profitable. And I mean, I know they're a non-for-profit organization, but you can't be going negative every year and expect to run an organization. So, you know, they're looking at ways to boost revenue, and I get that. That makes sense. I can't fault them for that at all. So, but yeah, I made a joke before the podcast to you guys. I said, like, if that was on the Tri-Tank challenge, I don't think that would have won at all.
Yeah. And I mean, granted, like, more revenue for USA Triathlon, maybe that means that more opportunity for them to put on Derek's idea, right?
Yeah.
And host a club championship.
Yep. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. You know, I think the biggest thing, I you know, I didn't really touch on this when I was talking about it, but the biggest hurdle would be getting the USAT scores almost immediately, because I think it'd be really important for each team to be ranked week after week. So if a race took place on Saturday, for example, knowing where that team stands before the following weekend would be important. That way they know if they need to race again to qualify or bump out another team. And yeah, so we'll see. So that'd be the biggest lift, really. Cause at the end of the day, like, putting on a race, you know, I know they only produce two races. They produce age group nationals and they produce multi-sport nationals. But I think this would be an opportunity where you link it up with like Clash Daytona, for example, that we have a mass start, you know, 45 teams, 7 athletes per team. And then you link it up with another event like that, have your Olympic distance race alongside of long course national championships, and there you have it. So, but I will say one thing though. So I did get a slight whiff of the membership tier right after the Endurance Exchange, because I changed my membership to my age group status, and they mentioned something about like a silver tier. And I had no idea what they were even talking about. So I knew something was up, but I didn't even inquire about it. And then a couple of days later, we found out anyway.
Interesting.
Yep. But, well, I know we're approaching the hour. Anything else from you guys?
I don't think there's anything else that I wanted to chat about. I mean, this was my second time attending Endurance Exchange. It was in Austin, Texas last year. And I thought that was a really great venue. Charlotte was awesome too, being at UNC Charlotte. It wasn't quite in downtown Charlotte, But overall, just being on the college campus was cool. So yeah, I definitely look forward to attending again in the future. I love the opportunity to network and spend a lot of time around coaches, race directors, USAT staff and faculty. Like, yeah, it was a really great time, and yeah, enjoyed hanging out with you guys too.
Yeah, I second all that. It was my first time. Definitely enjoyed it, and would go back, especially depending on location. But yeah, I think a lot of times, you know, coaches and even athletes in triathlon, it becomes very like individualized competition, where this was a great opportunity for collaboration. And I think that's really important in coaching, is just, you know, using the ideas of everyone. We're not trying to oust each other in this. You know, we're all in it, and trying to become the best as we can. So I think, you know, being able to bounce ideas off each other, and just talk through different philosophies and trainings and all that is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to echo what you guys have both said, like the collaboration was awesome. I'll continue to go. This is my first in-person interest exchange that I went to. And, you know, being able to partner with other industry leaders is super valuable. You know, even like coaching is one aspect of it, but even just knowing what race directors are doing, because like we got to view them as a partner in the business, because they're one hosting the events that our athletes are going to. I even mentioned to USAT staff that like they really got to push for even like club leaders to get out there. Like I'm talking about your local club presidents, vice presidents, or board members. That way they can have an opportunity to learn how to grow their clubs and membership there as well, because that would be a full circle of just executing growth in the sport, and I think it'd be really valuable. But yeah, I can't wait to go again. I'm curious to see where it is next year. But yeah, thanks for jumping on, guys. And if anyone wants to reach out to Becca or Derek, you know, you can reach us at info@workingtriathlete.com. Or if you guys want to provide your information separately, go ahead.
Yeah, you can reach out to me at dowens@workingtriathlete.com or find me on Instagram at owensdericks.
Yeah, my Instagram is Becca_Schulte3. So yeah, feel free to send me a DM if you're interested. Or yeah, just go through the Working Triathlete inquiry form as well. That works too.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. And I know both of you guys are taking on more athletes, so if you are looking for a coach, here's two of them that you guys can consider. Thanks again, guys.
Have a good one.
Cheers.